9/11, the 10-year anniversary of when some pretty nasty stuff came down in our country. And here we are 10 years later, and very blessed and glad that there hasn't been a repeat of that kind of craziness. And certainly we're excited to move our lives ahead, to be stronger, to bring more balance and more peace in the world, because we know that it's only angry, hurting, upset people that do this kind of stuff. And we've made a commitment here at Advanced Living. Daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives, so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. So, yes, that's our theme. And we just want to thank you for tuning in. And while you're tuning in, want to remind you to give a look to our sponsor. The sponsor of our program is AdvancedLiving.com, the home of the comfort technology. It's a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. Yes, a stylish little digital clock you'd see on your desk or your nightstand, and yet when you plug it in, it creates an energy shift like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It brings these peaceful, calming energies that help for better sleep, help to reduce stress. Just wonderful. When you get a moment, be sure to give yourself that treat of looking into what's there at AdvancedLiving.com. And there's some special pricing if you click on the Instant Stress Relief logo on our website here in Advanced Living Radio. You will get some big savings. All right. Well, here we are, folks, a special program. What if you could get a tune-up for your brain that could help you break free of addiction? And there's all kinds of levels of addiction, and we're going to find out about some of that soon with our wonderful guest coming up. But some people are stuck, and it may be drugs, and it may be gambling, and it may be TV, it may be sex. There's just so many different things out there, and yet it's like stuck. Person can't help themselves. Well, with a brain tune-up at the Courage to Change centers, they can help you to break free of addictions. And we have a wonderful guest that's coming in to help us today, Chad Croft, who is getting his master's in counseling, is a student, and he's been working as an intern at the Courage to change ranches, and it's been wonderful because we get a fresh point of view of someone that's just in school, someone that's new to this program, and so he in his own life and the people that he knows, he kind of comes from not knowing about this stuff to knowing about it, and we're going to get some wonderful insights from him that only someone fresh and new could give us. And this is just a wonderful thing. So we want to take a moment and welcome Chad to the program. Hello, Chad.
How you doing, Ken? How's things going today?
Oh, I'll tell you, we're so excited. This is just wonderful. Couldn't be a better program on the eve of 9/11 to have the courage to change, because we need to be able to change, and you've got some wonderful stuff you're doing there at this Courage to Change Ranches. Would you give us a little bit about the background of this, how long it's been around, who got it started, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. Courage to Change was started back in 2004 by Dr. Judy Miller. Her vision is basically to create an atmosphere where people that are addicted to both drugs and alcohol can come there and basically learn a new way to think, a new way to live, break free of the atmosphere, the way of thinking, whatever that trapped them in their addiction, and find a new way to think and to live and to act and to view the world. And that's why we call it Courage to Change. It's a combination of us giving the tools and them finding the courage to use those tools to become better and stronger people.
Oh, wow. Wow, I like that. And I don't know, because there's many programs out there. For instance, 12-step programs have been around for a long time and had a lot of success. And one of the intriguing things about a 12-step program is they have people at each of the meetings basically make a statement that they are powerless over the drugs. They've been helpful to a lot of people, and yet it was never, from my studies, a very nice thing to think of a person, a child of God, someone with this amazing potential, that they weren't stronger or potentially stronger than any drug or substance or behavior or attitude. And so I'd like to get a little bit of the philosophy behind some of the treatment and the views of some of this process that the Courage to Change.
Well, first of all, I want to start by saying that it is absolutely true that a lot of people, particularly people that suffer from addictions, if they take it on head on, I mean, they're just not going to beat it. There's just something in their brain or the way that things are wired or programmed, that if they don't use outside techniques or techniques of avoidance or whatnot, you know, if they engage it head-on, they just simply don't have the tools to win. But at Courage to Change, we teach either, you know, how to get away, how to seek help, how to distract or get away from the situation. Like, for instance, generally speaking, if someone has a craving for some kind of addictive behavior, if they can resist it for a certain amount of time, it goes away for a short period of time. So teaching somebody how to distract themselves or get away from it for a certain period of time until it goes away, until the next battle comes up, is a technique that we would teach there. I think really the first thing, though, is having people recognize that they do have a problem, that the drugs are very powerful, if not unbeatable, and once again, in a direct sense. And they're not unbeatable in the big picture, but they need techniques of getting around them and avoiding them. And that they need to realize that they're just something within their nature that makes them want to use and want to hurt themselves and avoid facing life. And we try to help them recognize that and help them recognize things in their life that they can use to gain power and gain strength and gain motivation to beat whatever it is that's addicting them.
Wow. Well, that's important. I really like that. So you feel like people can claim that supremacy over different behaviors or different substances?
Overall, once again, there are ways of doing it. It might mean complete avoidance of that substance. It might mean completely avoiding the neighborhood, the people, whatnot that are associated with that substance. But there are ways of getting away from it. You know, you may not be able to watch a movie that has something that you're addicted to or go to a place that you're addicted to, but you can get away from it. If you can just completely avoid it, go to a different part of town, hang out with people that aren't involved with those sort of things, yes, you can avoid doing it. But then, on the other hand, there are people that avoid using for 30 years, think they're fine, go back into the atmosphere that has that drug or alcohol or whatever the addiction is, and they'll fall right back into it. So saying that you've completely beaten it is not necessarily a true statement, but there are ways of avoiding falling into it and being harmed by it again.
Right. And, of course, one of the things that that I'm curious about, too, is what you're there, if I'm understanding correctly, to really support people on a comprehensive basis using modern wellness techniques to not only be free of addictions, but to really build strong, healthy lives for themselves. Is that some of what you're up to?
Absolutely. Not only do we try to, I mean, I keep on making the point with the clients that we can't recreate a void here. All right, their life has been completely surrounded or completely centered on their addiction. Okay, so we beat the addiction. We put it aside. We put it back. No, now what? There's no life. There's no good friends, relationships, career, whatnot. So we need to help them find these things to fill the voids, positive things to replace the negatives. If we just take out the negative, as they say, nature hates a vacuum, and it'll just more negatives will come back in. So we teach them to make plans, to think about situations. We do a SWOT analysis, which is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, to look at situations and say, hey, you know, where can I get the best out of this? Teach them to find more positive relationships, find people that will build them up and make them stronger instead of bringing them down into their addictive behavior. Just coming up with techniques of recognizing when they might have trouble with their addictions, finding hobbies, sports, just about anything to fill that void except for the addiction, to get them away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really like what you're saying, because like you were making mention, someone had an addictive problem, and along with that addictive problem, whether it was a substance or behavior, it wasn't just in an isolated thing, typically. They didn't just go off into a room by themselves and do something to fulfill their abusive nature. They had a whole system set up. There might be a social circle, places where they met, people that they hung out with, and then you're saying, well, geez, avoiding that could be really important for someone who's wanting to build a life based on some stronger principles. Is that kind of some of what you're indicating?
That's absolutely true. One of the analogies that I love to use with my clients is basically have them picture themselves as basically having their clothes completely soaked in a flammable material.
Okay.
say your clothes are soaked in gasoline. Are you going to get anywhere near a fire? Would you?
No, Chad, I promise I won't.
could you ever talk to yourself into thinking that you can get near a fire and not get lit on fire if you're soaked in gasoline?
Not under normal circumstances.
And I try to create this mental image here of you cannot get near these sources of flame, whether it's the people, the places, the music, movies, etc. They seem to think, you know, that's one of the lies that an addict will tell themselves, is that they can get near this source of their addiction, and this time they'll beat it. And could you ever tell yourself, well, you know, I'm covered with gasoline, but this time I'm not going to get lit on fire? The answer is no. And
yeah,
that's the type of mentality I try to create there. It's total avoidance. You have to avoid anything that is a flame, you know, a source of that kind of flame.
Sure.
It's the same thing with addiction. You have to avoid any trigger that might be associated with that until you build your own tolerances. Now, some people do, some people don't. But you got to get that gasoline out of the clothes before you can go anywhere near that kind of thing. And that's part of what we try to teach also occurs at Change. 30 days is usually not enough to get someone completely cleaned up. But that's part of what we're trying to do, is build up some kind of mental resistance also to it. Once again, that's a lifetime. Some people never get there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, boy, it's amazing that you can really make some breakthroughs in as little a time as 30 days.
Exactly, and really the thing that we're going to do in 30 days is give the equipment and help people basically come to know themselves, look at the truth, and understand the nature of their addiction and what it's doing in their lives.
Yeah, yeah, and then I like the way you use different empowering metaphors, like being soaked in gasoline. Would you go near someone that had matches or had candles near them, or there was a fire? It's like, no, you'd avoid that. But
exactly.
But you might turn in another direction and go to a place where you could get new clothes and get cleaned up, so that the threat of bursting into flames wasn't there for you. And that
exactly.
would be an alternative path that you're talking about. What kind of clients do you see typically at the Courage to Change ranches?
Well, typically they're either addicts of alcohol or drugs. Age ranges can vary from, we've had as young as 18, everyone's at least an adult, but as young as 18, we've had clients in their 60s.
Oh.
Everyone needs, deserves a chance in life and to turn around, and everyone's got a different story. But people come from all walks of life. Some rich, some poor, some from all over the country, all different people groups. We're well represented at Courage to Change.
Oh, okay.
But the main thing is that there are usually drug addicts, or once again, alcohol addicts. They could have different levels of how much time they've been addicted. Some could be in legal trouble, some aren't. Some are forced to be there, some are not. So there's a pretty good mix of people there.
Oh, okay. And now, is there any particular process of how you select clients? Is just anyone can take part in your program, or there's certain things that you'd look for?
Well, treatability is a factor. We're pretty liberal in who we take. Basically, if someone needs help, we're pretty open to taking them. The only times that we would be resistant is if someone was like, so violent that they could be a threat to us, or if they had a very, very serious mental illness that we didn't have the equipment to treat there. If we, if we had someone like with a schizophrenia, just very mental illnesses that would basically make our kind of treatment almost impossible, because they have to have some kind of, relatively intact mind for us to be able to teach them and use our most of our therapeutic techniques. So sometimes I need to go to a hospital and take care of those kind of things first.
Okay, got it. So there, some things could be so severe that you would defer out to other, possibly psychiatric hospitals or whatever, to help get someone stabilized enough to the point where they could be receptive to learning some new techniques.
True. Basically, in the psychology field, you only want to treat one thing at a time. If you're treating multiple things, it creates a lot of undesirable factors. And typically, a serious mental illness will be treated before an addiction.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, that makes sense. So, like you say, one thing at a time. And then, I don't know, someone coming to your program, what's it like when they begin to participate, your intake?
The initial intake, first we'll do an assessment with them. We'll get our diagnostic manual, the DSM-4, and go through whatever they're dealing with. And that's quite often where we might screen out mental illnesses or other issues that might make treatment difficult, or we can adjust our treatment to whatever the condition might be. We'll come up with a treatment plan once we understand exactly what we're dealing with. We'll schedule meetings, set up daily chores, different treatment schedules, depending on, once again, what we're dealing with. Some people might need some kind of medication, particularly when they're in withdrawal, and just to basically keep up certain body chemicals, keep them in balance while we're trying to work with them. We've been able to help with different legal issues. I mean, some people are basically looking at either jail time or coming to Courage to Change, and we've helped out several people, at least in the time I've been there, that otherwise would have gone to prison. Basically gave them another chance before they went into that.
Wow.
But basically, we try to tailor the program to the needs of the people that come in. There's some things that are common to the people that come in, but everyone's a different story, and the treatment needs to be fairly flexible to deal with that.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's each program is very personalized to an individual's needs, I'm taking it.
Very much so, yes.
Ah, okay. Now, what's intriguing to me as I got a chance to learn a little bit about your Courage to Change ranches there is some of the unique types of therapies that are used. Would you go into some of that? Because these aren't things that you hear about every day.
Of course, we have the more typical basic type therapies. We do group therapy on average about 4 hours a day. So we'll go through and we'll do anything from, hey, you know, how you're feeling today, what makes you feel better, what keeps you away from your addiction, how are you feeling last time you used whatever you used. Basically, a lot of groups here are very similar to AA NA meetings, and we do actually take our clients to AA and NA meetings. We also use cognitive behavioral therapy, which once again basically shows them, okay, this is what you want in life, this is how you're behaving, and this is what you're doing, and, you know, show how it basically doesn't fit. And how what they're doing is contributing, how each one of their actions contributes to where they're at in life right now, instead of it just being, bad luck or, someone's out to get them or whatnot. They can actually see step by step, okay, this is how you got here, and this is what you need to change in order to improve. The less typical therapies, number one, there's EMDR, which is eye movement, desensitization, and restructuring. Basically what that does is it helps deal with traumatic, hurtful situations in the past. And what you'll find is a lot of people that deal with addictions have a lot of trauma in their past, whether it's abuse, a broken family, anger issues, etc. So dealing with those issues quite often helps with the addictive behavior. The addictive behavior is quite often an escape from other issues. Another thing we do there is called EMT, which is...
Yeah, I was just curious on this EMDR. In other words, are you... there's a phrase that... many of us are familiar with called pushing someone's buttons or getting our buttons pushed, something triggering an emotional response. And so most of the time, people say, well, I was fine, and then I got my buttons pushed, and then I was a different person. I lost control. And so is this EMDR one of the methods that you use that can help break that cycle?
One of the primary concepts of EMDR is taking whatever that situation that creates these emotional responses and bringing a resolution to it. So, for instance, if someone was in a traumatic situation when they were 8 years old, we would reopen that memory, cycle through it, and help it move from the part of the brain that's like actively keeping it in their fight and flight mode, etc., and moving it back into the kind of the memory cortex of the brain. So the emotions that are associated with it are dealt with and diffused in a way.
Ah.
So you can still remember it. You still know what happened, but the emotions attached to it are no longer affecting you.
Okay. Yeah. So, on a simplistic level, Chad, I'm thinking, for instance, you get out of bed, I've stubbed my toe, and that hurt, but it's not a long-lasting trauma. There was some emotion to it at the time and some pain to it, but that's a thing of the past. And I'm just wondering if you're saying that for things that were much more intense emotionally that we may still be stuck in, that we can get them to resolve to that place where, yes, it happened, and no, it doesn't bother me anymore.
That's exactly what we're trying to focus on doing and helping the mind realize that it's not stuck, it's not helpless, and it can respond properly to situations instead of being, feeling a victim or feeling like you can't do anything about it, powerless.
Yeah, and so you're opening a door to some, I would call them kind of breakthrough techniques that apparently, from what I'm understanding, and you'll go ahead and share a bit more about them, that they're easy to learn, and it's stuff that when you know what you're doing and you apply it, then it's like, wow, that was easy. And if you don't know it, then boy, it's hard dealing with some of these emotional responses. Would you go ahead a little bit more about, you know, with that EMDR, and then I guess there's some other things you use too?
Well, once again, EMDR is a fairly, it's not really something that someone can really do on themselves, at least safely. I mean, yes and no. You can process your own emotions somewhat. Now, another thing that we teach is called EFT, which is Emotional Freedom Techniques. It's kind of almost a non-needle acupuncture. And the concept of that is if you tap certain parts of your body or put pressure on certain pressure points, it'll block certain nerve impulses. So, like, say you have anger in your stomach and you feel like, you know, you're angry and your stomach's all tied in knots, you can, like, tap a part of your forehead or next to your eye, and it'll resolve that temporarily.
Okay, now, where are these points?
They vary, and honestly, trying to tell you where they are on the phone would probably not be very effective.
Oh, okay.
So you can look up EFT, Emotional Freedom Techniques. You can look it up on the computer. I'm sure it can tell you about some things or find a person that's willing to train it. But we have someone come in a couple times a month and goes over these type of techniques. And what eventually happens is if you're used to tapping a certain part of your body as a response to certain emotions, eventually you can just do it in your head.
Uh-huh.
So like, okay, I feel anxiety right now, and you can just kind of mentally block it by thinking of tapping in a certain area because it creates certain pathways in your brain.
Sure.
So it's, once again, it's similar to acupuncture. There's also something called dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, which is really kind of more of a inner get-to-know-yourself type thing, which is common to almost any faith, philosophy. I mean, any like true philosopher emphasizes knowing yourself. You know, you go from Zhang Zhu to Socrates to Jesus Christ, they all say, know yourself. And that's the kind of mentality behind DBT, is helping people come into a deep understanding of who they are, what makes them tick, what they want. So it's kind of a form of meditation, et cetera.
Oh.
And one final thing that we use is called lens training, which is basically a biofeedback technique, neurofeedback, which detects different signals in the brain. So it's kind of a more direct impulse, a direct contact with the brain. And what it will do is it'll see where the brain's firing the most, what kind of signals are coming out of different parts of the brain. So for instance, if you're dealing with someone, say, with trauma or PTSD issues, and you notice that the part of the brain that deals with fight or flight or, you know, reactionary defense type things is really firing off a lot of certain waves, then you'll know that they're kind of in that mode, and you want to get those waves moving back to the active thinking part of the brain, the control part.
Okay, now, do you have to cut their skull open to do this?
Do not need to. You can even have hair. Don't need to shave your head usually. You just put sensors right on the scalp, and they will sense the waves coming out of your brain, and there are certain ways of learning to modify those waves in a direct sense. Once again, kind of a little bit too complex to talk about, you know, on a telephone, but it is quite effective. It's been proven to be pretty effective on teaching people to relax, focus, once again, dealing with trauma, PTSD issues, some drug use issues, addictions.
Huh. Okay, so this is the LENS, right? You
that's
mentioned,
correct.
And that's what, low energy, something.
I looked it up, and you know, it just basically said it's a form of neurofeedback, but neurological sensing or something along those lines.
Once again,
it's a direct interaction with the brain signals that your brain is producing, and it allows you to monitor them and helps teach you in a direct way to control what your brain's doing.
Yeah. Wow. And I love the part on the website where it's talking a little bit about that technique, and it indicates that to do this treatment, there's less electrical energy used than a person gets from wearing a watch, from the battery in their watch.
It's absolutely safe. It's not going to harm the brain. It just basically detects what's going on. The actual inputs are actually typically done by your own brain system. I mean, there's a little bit of input, but typically you're actually controlling your own brain waves.
Wow. Wow. And then this helps to, once again, break free of some of these stuck patterns.
Absolutely.
Ah. And now I know you've only been there a short time, but have you seen some successes that you can share? Not telling anyone's name, but love to, you know, get a little insight into some of what you've seen.
Well, I can give a basic cross section of the type of people that seem to succeed. They usually have good amounts of social support. They usually have some form of direction in life that they had before they got addicted, some kind of goals, direction, purpose. Quite often, not quite the youngest crowd. Quite often they're a little bit older. They've experienced things. Didn't necessarily spend their entire life addicted. And a lot of it has to do with how much they put into the program. The people that are really focused and really trying tend to have more success than those who are just doing, you know, going through the motions, of course.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty neat. There's a term, I don't know how many people are familiar with it, recidivism. Someone makes a breakthrough, but they're not able to sustain it. And I'm curious about how you address some of that at the Courage to Change Ranches. And by the way, folks, if you want to learn more about this, can you give the website for that, please, Chad?
C2CRanches.org.
Okay, and is that the word 2 or the number 2?
That's the letter, or the number 2, correct. So
okay.
C2CRanches.org.
Okay.
I would say it looks like it's pretty up to date right now, and should be able to get all information from that, and you're always welcome to call a staff member. The numbers are accurate on there, so you should be able to get a hold of us anytime during normal working hours.
Ah, okay. And I see you have a toll-free number that starts 855.
Correct.
And so for us folks that thought, well, there's 800, there's 888, there's 877, there's 866, and now guess what? It's 855 is a toll-free number. Okay.
A lot of numbers out there.
Yeah. Well, this is good. And then where are you located?
We're located in Colorado Springs. One of our facilities, we also have one in Estes Park, but the one I work at is in Colorado Springs, pretty centrally located.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. I love it. Okay, now, so we've got, we made mention of the EMDR, the EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, this dialectic, behavior technique?
The dialectical behavior therapy, yes.
Behavior therapy, yeah, okay. And I'm guessing there may be some other things that you're using. Would you? Is there any more tricks you got in that bag of yours?
Basically anything that creates a positive focus in life. I've mentioned before doing SWOT analysis of life. I basically will quite often, when talking to clients, will ask them, okay, where do you want to go in life? What is anything? And then create like a step-by-step process of helping them get a realistic goal. I think a lot of people that are in that situation don't have a lot of hope. They're not thinking along the lines of how to take the step-by-step process of not only succeeding in life, but they're digging themselves out of a hole right now quite often. Their life's been wrecked in a lot of cases by their addictions. Relationships have been broken. Jobs have been lost. There's, you know, jail sentences are quite often involved. And I try to impress on the clients there that it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be work to get back into life. It's not just going to be a magic wand, oh, you're better and everything's good. You know, here's your car, house, your relationships back. That's not going to happen. It takes time and it takes work. And just teaching people discipline in that one step at a time mentality is very helpful in that situation. So just teaching people to get up in time in the morning, to be at the meetings at a particular time, to eat healthy food, to get exercise, to interact in a positive manner. I mean, interpersonal conflict is a big thing there, which quite often we have a dozen people there that are different personalities, many who are dealing with problems and issues of their own, just teaching them to deal with a conflict issue, which is often a trigger, by the way, for addictions, interpersonal conflict, whatnot, teaching skills of those lines, communication skills, education, where to find jobs, where to find positive, good, clean fun. A lot of these people, I mean, their addiction has been their entire life for 10, 15, 20, who knows how many years. So just teaching them how to find basic things in life is quite often part of it. So, I mean, you name it. Quite often we have to, you know, once again, we tailor it to the different individuals depending on where they're coming from, how old, you know, what experiences they have. But it can be anything and everything. Once again, not just taking away the addiction, but helping them find a life to replace it.
Okay. So this this term that is often used in conversation in kind of a nasty way, this get a life thing, is actually something important that you're helping someone to do, which is to plan for what would be a satisfying life for them. And this sounds pretty neat. And you made mention, Chad, about you look into diet, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Certain foods contain certain chemicals, and they will affect how you feel.
Can you give a couple of examples?
Well, for instance, the tryptophan in turkey. It has quite often has the calming effects that a lot of depressants might have, for instance. Proteins are very important.
So
we make sure people eat a lot of protein.
Yeah, so like so if you eat too much turkey, you get depressed?
You can.
Okay.
You'll have a certain... you know, and once again, it depends on the person.
Sure, okay.
Certain foods will affect certain people in certain ways, but definitely getting people away from eating, you know, the sugary junk foods, caffeine. We try to focus on weaning out of the people system. Once again, it's a drug. And, you know, there's certain people react to it certain ways, but once again, it does throw the system off, the bodily system. We try to have people eat a good, balanced diet, you know, clean, healthy, natural foods. And once again, get the sleep, get the exercise, et cetera. Exercise is, once again, a great replacement for any kind of drug. It releases, you know, chemicals in the body that make you feel good. And the better shape you're in, the more resistant you'll be to needing to use.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so this is that's pretty exciting to me, Chad, because you have a supervised setting, and you find that when you implement the advice that most of us were given, like eat well and get exercise, and of course, chances are pretty good if someone's dealing with a serious addiction, they're probably not eating well, and they're probably not getting a lot of exercise unless the police are chasing them.
Yeah, probably not. We're basically just trying to teach the clients there to take control of their lives. And it's a step-by-step process. And to understand that everything they do makes a difference, including how they eat, exercise, make appointments, interact with people, etc.
Wow. And then is the nutrition, is it general advice, or do you get to, like, specific nutrition for, I've seen books that talk about eating for your blood type, for instance, and I don't know if you've heard of that concept. But,
a lot of these programs are put together by Dr. Miller, and she is she spent many, many years studying the effects of all, you know, different chemicals and inputs and whatnot, and, you know, she has a wealth of knowledge of that already, and I'm sure she gets inputs from that, but she's pretty much the guru on that. She will put together the basic ideas of what to be eaten and whatnot.
Okay.
Where she got it from, you know...
That's a... Yeah, well...
Point,
We hope to do some more follow-up and have Dr. Miller on the show sometime. I'm guessing I'm curious to do the cooking staff there. I don't know how far you go in terms of the purity of food. I mean, is it organic, that kind of stuff, or I'm not, sure. There's different levels that people go to and is there a custom tailored diet for each person? I don't know enough about your facility, so I'm kind of curious. I know you're doing some good stuff. Would you help me a little there?
Outside of allergies, people pretty much eat the same thing. The staff members go out and buy the food, but actually that's part of the chores of the clients there is to cook for the other clients.
Oh.
And we've had some pretty good cooks come through there, believe it or not. I mean, some of them really know how to cook, and some of them haven't, and they've learned how to cook. So that's, once again, that's another skill.
Sure.
To learn how to fend for yourself and make a difference and to be independent. But how to cook, clean, do basic maintenance, all those things are also learned while you're at the ranch.
Ah, see, this is huge. When I hear this, I get even more impressed because when you're there and you're helping someone to get some skills that not only help them to help someone else when they cook for others, that's a wonderful way of giving, and then they develop a skill of being able to cook so that they can cook for themselves. That's huge.
It's very important.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm as I see a little bit more. There's a whole lot of thought that's going into this process that you've got going there. And now I'm curious. Being part of the staff, what kind of training does the staff there typically have?
Well, of course, Dr. Miller has a PhD and also CAC 3. Now, CAC stands for Certified Addiction Counselor, which is a very specified training for dealing with addictions and typically required for most addiction-type atmospheres. There are several people with different levels of CACs. You have the CAC 1, which is the basic level, then 2 and 3. As they gain experience, it takes about 4 to 5 years to get a CAC 3, typically speaking. Of the staff that's actually hired staff, there's 1-3, I believe, and 2 CAC 2s. Of the interns, most of us are working on master's degrees and getting various kinds of training. I'm also working on EMDR training myself. It should be done in a few months. So there are different levels of training among the staff. But that's the basic thing, though. I mean, once again, a lot of the philosophies that work in other forms of therapy work for counseling addictions, but there are definitely specified things that help to have the specific CAC licensure or the CAC training.
Ah, that's great. That's great. And now we're dealing, it seems like, I don't know if you have any figures, but I'm guessing that addiction of some sort is pretty common. And is it just mostly stress or any particular thing that you see that's typical for bringing that on?
From my perspective, addiction has always been there. There might be more things. We have, obviously, our infrastructure is so much more advanced now. You can get a hold of things that you couldn't get a hold of before. But, I mean, alcohol problems have been there forever. You go back to the beginning of history, as long as there's been alcohol, there's been alcoholics.
Yeah.
One of the major things I think you see today is a lot more communication. It used to be, Uncle So-and-so had that, closet problem that no one talked about. Now these days, people are probably going to be more open about talking about family members that are using public figures. You hear about them all the time. They never get left alone. You got your movie stars or your musicians that are constantly going in and out of rehab and whatnot, and unfortunately, a lot of young people see them as role models and are affected by that, of course. And, once again, you got the beer commercials. You got society, a lot of our society is around this, get your thrills now. Don't worry about the consequences. must have it right here, right now mentality without thinking about the consequences. And once again, that's part of what we're trying to do at Courage to Change, is help people think about those consequences.
Wow.
And put it in the perspective of goals, philosophies, worldviews, etc., taking them away from that here-now mentality. Because once again, in the here-now mentality, the addiction is always going to win.
Huh. Huh.
But our addiction's new. Our addiction's new, no. They've been around forever. And also, I think a major issue right now is that people are losing their social networks. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, the time for people to be positively watching what their kids do is less these days. It's people have less accountability. People are always moving. It's just harder to keep track of things in a lot of ways, even though we're communication, you know, you have all these different social networks and whatever, it's becoming personal. And I think a lot of people just don't notice that their friends are being affected the way they used to.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate. As we move to a virtual world where you can put any picture you want on a computer screen, but that's not a picture of what your house looks like or what shape you're in. But
nope.
If you're hanging out with friends, it's obvious. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's some real important things that you're bringing up, and it's interesting too from the standpoint of our culture. So many substances that lead to addiction. You're talking about get people off of caffeine, and my gosh, the Red Bull, Mountain Dew, Pepsi, Coke. I mean, Dr. Pepper, on and on. The amount of stuff being pushed with that. How many years did it take for tobacco to get taken out of ads? And apparently, cigarettes have finally been determined that no, they're really not good for you, which was proven many years ago. But you know, and then alcohol, my gosh, it's been glorified for how long? So it's kind of an uphill battle, it seems like, with a culture that's constantly pushing role models and advertising for substances that people can get addicted to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of places out there.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that there's a place like yours where people can turn and they can get some new techniques and some education and some social skills and really get their brain tuned up. That's pretty exciting. Now, I'm curious if there's any particular drugs that seem to be the most difficult to deal with.
Alcohol is the most prevalent. I would say of the people that have come in that have been the hardest to treat, I think the methamphetamines have been huge. A lot of clients have not even made it into the treatment. It's like they'll just... Meth is really difficult to deal with. It's hard to get people through withdrawal even. We get people in there still suffering from meth withdrawal, and it's very, very difficult to deal with. Opiates are also a major one to deal with because they're painkillers. And a lot of people do have legitimate either physical or psychological pain they want to deal with. So that requires a considerable amount of therapy to try to get them to the point where they don't need that anymore. But once again, a lot of these things are over the counter. You can get them at a drugstore. So the abuse of legal painkiller type things is also difficult to deal with.
Wow, interesting. Okay, and is there any kind of advice that you can give to folks who are dealing with undesirable habits or addictions?
The first thing you have to understand about addictions is they always cause you to lie to yourself. If you think you're in trouble, you are. If you don't think you're in trouble, you still might be. It's usually going to play down. You know, it's not that bad. You can get over it. Bottom line is, first of all, stay connected with people that care about you. Talk to them, run it by them. They'll see it before you will. If you're having problems, you have close friends, they'll see it. Second of all, don't be afraid to seek help. I mean, talking to a counselor once, you can, you know, call a place like C2C and just ask, hey, you know, does this look like I'm in trouble? First call, probably not going to even get charged for anything. You can be anonymous. Bottom line is, the farther you go into it and the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be able to deal with it. And finally, just once again, be real with yourself. Understand that you're a fallible person. You can make mistakes. Everyone has bad habits. Everyone has flaws. And it's part of life process to kind of get over and get past those. I mean, seek help from people. Have your friends help you out, hold you accountable, et cetera. And everyone can benefit from that, not just people that are official addicts.
Okay. So, as you're mentioning, that support network, that's really important. And I appreciate that you mentioned, can we give out that toll-free number in case someone wanted to call and get that little complimentary check-in call with you folks?
Once again, they're always welcome to contact it. You go ahead if you want to, or would you like me
sure.
to?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I have here 1-855-572-1547. Or if you're the regular phone number, apparently, is the 719. This is in Colorado Springs, 719-572-1547 or 719-541-4912. And you can get those on the website, the letter C, the number 2, the letter C, ranches.org.
That's correct.
Oh, boy. I got that part out. And then can you share any advice, as we have a couple more minutes left, about when folks have loved ones who are suffering from addiction?
Once again, I would say, number one, stay involved in your loved ones' lives. Be part of it. And once again, if you suspect as a loved one that something's wrong, probably there is something wrong. You may not know what it is. But these people, once again, if they're an addict, they know to lie to themselves. They've been lying to themselves. If they're lying to themselves, they're going to be lying to you. So, first of all, once again, if you suspect there's a problem, follow through on it. Stay with it. Communicate. Show that you care. And once again, if you see trouble, probably means that legitimately there is trouble. And don't hesitate to call a place like CTC for advice. Especially if you're dealing with children, it's never too early to intervene.
Uh-huh.
They'll get over it. If you intervene and they don't need it, they'll get over it. If you don't intervene and they do need it, it could be anything from a loss of relationship to that child's life may be eventually over. We have so many cases where people started drinking or using, 12, 13 years old. So the faster you get to it, the better.
Okay. Well, that's important. And then when someone or loved one, think that they need some help, what would you say is the first step? I mean, is it like give you folks a call, or what do you do to get started?
There are addiction treatment facilities all over the country. You can get on the web, the Yellow Pages, et cetera. I mean, you can find a place that will be happy to give you instruction and advice. And I'm not going to insult anyone's skill as a parent. I respect that, but a lot of people do not know, as a parent, as a spouse, as a friend, how to deal with other people's addictions or their own. And it never hurts to get advice and to seek professional help.
I don't recall anything from my childhood of conversations about when someone's addicted, or here's what you do, or how do we address this. These weren't topics of conversation. So,
nope. Just say no, I guess, was the big thing back then, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Chad, this has just been great. I so appreciate knowing about the C2C Ranches, or the Courage to Change Ranches programs, and for you taking time out of your schedule to come and share these resources and some of these new techniques. Really appreciate it.
And that's no problem. I'm glad to help.
Well, that's a pleasure, and I'll be checking in and down the road. I'd like to possibly have Judy, Dr. Miller, be a guest with some of her, because I know the addiction stuff is really something that we deal with in many different levels, whether it's a substance or an attitude or a behavior, we can always move ahead. So thank you so much, and give my regards to Judy when you talk with her. And
will do.
All right. And so until we meet again, beloved listeners, Chad, thank you, and God bless. Goodbye for now.